The field of artificial intelligence is a field that is very important today. Artificial intelligence is being applied in many, many ways, and indeed is pervading our lifestyle, even without us knowing it or thinking about it. So different types of intelligence that are artificially intelligence-based or artificial intelligence-based are search engines like Google. The Google search engine is based on artificial intelligence, an artificial intelligence system that is applied to search. So now when we use the Google search engine, we don't usually think, wow, this is an incredible example of artificial intelligence. We just use the search engine. And so you see, without even knowing about it, artificial intelligence is very much present in our life. At the same time, and this is just an example, of course, that I'm using in Google, is that at Google, they feel they're only 5% of the way there in terms of what they understand about artificial intelligence solving the problem of conversant search, fully conversant search. And today, that might seem amusing to us, but the whole idea of the internet and what it can do now was amusing to us 18 years ago. And so, you know, we wouldn't have ever considered that 18 years from 1990 we'd be in the situation we're in now with electronic and telecommunications. And so, you know, what is the key variable to the advance of artificial intelligence? Well, in the field of artificial intelligence, there is the science and technology of the intelligence itself as it's applied to different systems. The other key component of artificial intelligence is the philosophy of mind. I don't know whether you know this or not, but anyone who is developing artificial intelligence at a high or low level has an interest in the philosophy of mind in one way or another. And it, of course, when we try to put human intelligence into machines, then we see why the philosophy of mind would be important, because what we're trying to do is place something similar to human intelligence in a machine of some kind. And so you see, with understanding that, then you can see why it's not just a matter of technological systems that brings artificial intelligence about. It's also really important to deeply understand the philosophy of mind. And that's really never been understood, nor has the coming together of the two never been definitively understood. And that's why the text talks about it as a marriage that finally occurs after a long courtship where the two were never able to meet. And that is the current state of artificial intelligence and the philosophy of mind. The two have not been able to meet. They're just chatterboxes towards each other. It's like meeting on eHarmony and having a long courtship by email, but never really meeting each other. When the two finally meet, there's going to be a much different experience than the click, click, click of keyboard keys. All right? The marriage of the philosophy of mind and science is a very good marriage. It's an excellent marriage, and its progeny is this incredible benefit that it brings to human beings into all of life. So what this text does is it keeps things simple from the beginning in terms of the description of the basic state. We're not trying to resolve the mind or issues of mind. What we're introducing is the fundamental law or principle about the nature of existence, and that is that there is a basic state that is self-cognizing. That's the primary identity. In order to understand any other identity of any phenomena whatsoever, it's important to understand this very basic state that is self-cognizing. Furthermore, believing that there are individual phenomena called human beings who somehow generate their own consciousness and a mind and all of that totally misses the point. That's an incomplete identity, or an identity that doesn't uphold the potential of what human beings are. And so that's what this text points out. And, you know, like it states here too, there will be people who read this who just by hearing it as a book on tape or on MP3, just by hearing it or reading it, they will completely understand what this is in their own experience without ever relying on short moments or anything. It'll just become totally clear in their own experience. As it points out in here, that it's required that this be experiential rather than simply reading this and saying, oh yeah, I intellectually understand it. But it has a very uncanny power to awaken that experience, so to speak, in the person reading the book, like to really integrate it into the knowledge base of everyone. Yeah, with that said, we do at a later point in the text bring up points of view and mind, and so all of that is thoroughly addressed in the text. But as for the get-go, we don't bring it up. Basic state is the same in all frames of reference. One of the principles, or the two principles of Einstein's theory of special relativity, is that physical laws are the same in all inertial frames. So this is he was talking about the theory of relativity, but this is talking about an absolute theory. For example, he was dealing only with the space-time continuum and what he knew about physical laws. So he said that fundamental physical laws are the same in all inertial frames. And with this, what we're stating, an absolute principle, that there is a basic state that is the same in all frames of reference, whether they're frames of reference that apply to the space-time continuum or to light or to anything else. There is a basic state that is common to all frames. So you see, you and I might not pick that up immediately if we were reading this, because maybe we don't know. We're not familiar with the special theory of relativity. However, someone who is would see that and they would get it right away. They'd see, wow, this is something that's perhaps important. It's worth looking into. Yeah, I really like the idea of being able to communicate with many different groups of people and not just being limited to one way of communicating. In order to reach people, it is essential to have a bridge of communication. In other words, if we just talk to people and we only have our own ideas about where we're coming from and what we want to say, then it's unlikely we're ever going to be able to communicate with that person. Because in order to communicate with anyone, first of all, there has to be openness, enough openness to really see where the other person's coming from. Now, in awareness, when one has gained confidence in awareness, instantaneously, without anyone saying anything, there's knowledge of where other people are coming from. And there's no need to try to prove one's own points of view in order to substantialize oneself. So all there is a responsiveness to where someone else is coming from and how to communicate with them in order to open up their understanding in some way. Exactly what is needed is known. So you see, that's how we move forward in the Great Freedom Teaching. We see there are certain people who don't understand awareness. So, you know, it's likely that they might understand short moments of peace better than short moments of awareness. So we'll create something right away for those people. And then there are other people who would balk at the simplicity of the peace teaching, and they'd say, oh, it's metaphysical or unscientific or whatever. So we have something for them too. And it's possible with flexible text today to create all kinds of documents. It's just like this document, everything that it says is in the peace teaching. It's just stated in a different way so that it can make sense to anyone. Yeah.